Start on time. We need to move our conversations along today. I might need to repeat that when other members are here. We have a lot on the agenda, and we're going to try very hard to work this forward. Senator Pappas has a bill that she is presenting in another committee and will join us as soon as she is able. So let's, with that being convened, we will start with the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. And with us, would you introduce yourselves and your name so that we can see who's here? Here comes Senator Pappas now, but you can go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and we can begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joel Alter with the Legislative Auditor's Office, and with me is Valerie Bombach of our office, who worked on our evaluation of the Minsky System Office that we're going to be talking about today.
Thank you. Please proceed.
What I would like to do is begin with a couple of general observations and then turn to some background and our findings and recommendations. And our first observation is that in Minsky, the legislature created a very large and complex higher education system, and with the intent that it be more than just a collection of individual colleges and universities. Minsky was created to be a system, and it needs to have a system office to provide direction, to ensure public accountability and coordination, and to provide certain administrative support services. Second, there are many positive things to say about where the Minsky system is 15 years into its history, but it was also apparent to us that there is more work to be done to ensure that the system office is performing essential functions and performing them well, and that it's fostering efficient, effective services at the campuses. Before discussing our findings, I'll review just a brief bit of background on the Minsky system. It was formed, as you know, 15 years ago. The legislature mandated in law a merger of the previously separate State University Community College and Technical College systems. It has a single governing board, the Board of Trustees. There are 32 colleges and universities around the state on 54 campuses. Minsky has a large enrollment, and it's been growing. The headcount of those who attended four-credit courses in 2009 was more than 250,000. But there's also a wide range of institutions under the Minsky umbrella. You've got some very small institutions, such as Rainy River Community College, which last year had fewer than 300 full-year equivalent students. You've also got some large state universities, such as those at Mankato and St. Cloud, which had more than 14,000 students. For the entire Minsky system, we're showing you here a revenue picture, and in fiscal year 2009, total revenues were more than $1.8 billion. And the largest share that's shown here in kind of the pink or magenta color, 39%, was represented by tuition, fees, and room and board. The next largest share, shown in red, represents state appropriations, and that was 36% of revenues. In contrast, let's look at the size of the system office. And by our estimate, fiscal 2009 expenditures by the system office totaled about $89 million. I should mention that that includes compensation for the Minsky presidents, who are considered to be employees of the system office. So altogether, note that state appropriations accounted for about 93% of the system office revenues. So I think sometimes people ask, well, why is the system office so important that we do a study of it? And I think one of the reasons is that not only is this a large endeavor, about $90 million a year, but also a large portion of the state dollars that are going to Minsky go to the system office. It amounts to about one of every eight state dollars. And one more bit of background, that is the organization of the system office. Again, there is a board of trustees, a little bit hard to see here, but at the top you've got the board. They are the governing body. The board hires a chancellor to serve as the CEO. The system office is often, in fact, called the office of the chancellor, and it has a number of divisions, the largest of which are academic and student affairs, finance and facilities, and information technology. And then, in addition, you've got the presidents of the 32 Minsky institutions who report directly to the chancellor. And finally, there is an office of internal auditing in the system office that reports directly to the Board of Trustees.
Senator Pappas.
Yes, Senator Sharon.
Would you mind just going back to the slide, pie chart slide again? Right there. In the 90, would you explain that 90, what you're saying about the 93%? Minsky System Office revenues is $89 million. 93% of what number?
93% of the system office, of the $89 million is state appropriations.
In other words, the tuition that students pay stay at the campus level.
Yes.
So the 93% is of state appropriated dollars?
Well, Madam Chair, of the $89 million in total revenues for the Minsky System Office, 93% of that is state appropriations.
I see.
As long as we've stopped, this is kind of a shocking number that we now have tuition outpacing state appropriations in terms of, you know, tuition at 39% of the revenue and state appropriations at 36%. And not too many years ago, it was 60-40, and then I thought it was 50-50. So this is really a very shocking number.
Madam Chair, and there is a little bit of background in Chapter 1 that just shows over the last few years the trends, and clearly, as you said, the trend has been for far more growth on the tuition and fee side than on the state appropriation side. Our office did an evaluation of Minsky back in 2000 when Minsky was a relatively young 5 years old. And at that time, it was still finding its way in many areas. And we reported some fairly significant governance issues within Minsky. And fortunately, our current study found improvement in several of these areas. In Minsky's early years, there was confusion and disagreement about the system's goals. Today, we found that the strategic planning process has been very much institutionalized within Minsky, and a clearer set of goals has emerged. Also, Minsky has taken some steps to actually track progress toward those goals. It had not done that in 2000. Minsky has developed what it calls an accountability dashboard for assessing progress in 10 areas. That's still a work in progress. It's not completely up and running yet. But as we discuss, this has been an important priority of both the chancellor and the board. Also, 10 years ago, the Minsky board and the chancellor had an often difficult relationship, whereas today we observe that there is mutual respect between the board and the chancellor. In addition, the board and chancellor have taken steps to provide more opportunities for presidents at the campuses to provide input into decision-making. And I think the most notable example of that would be what's called the Leadership Council, and that's composed of the chancellor, the cabinet, and the presidents, who meet regularly. I should add that Chancellor McCormick established that in 2001. At the same time, we observed in our report that there are some significant campus concerns about the system office's priorities and services. And we recognize that there are always going to be some tensions between a higher education system office and campuses, but we thought the extent of some of these concerns was noteworthy. For example, a majority of presidents gave the board, as well as the chancellor, only fair or poor ratings when asked how the needs and priorities of institutions are considered in decision making. Likewise, a majority of presidents gave the board and chancellor relatively low ratings when they were asked whether institutions are allowed to decide issues that are best addressed at the local level. Also, as I'll be discussing a little bit more, campuses expressed a desire for improved services in a number of areas. In some cases, that may have been better training and guidance. In other cases, greater responsiveness from system office staff. And in some cases, they simply thought that the services weren't as effective and efficient as they could be. Before talking about the services in more detail, though, I want to just take a couple of minutes to talk about the overall size of the system office, because legislators have asked, they certainly ask us, whether the system office is too big, and some have even suggested that perhaps there should be dramatic reductions in the system office size.
Mr. Alter, before you move on, back on slide 7, did you give them like a laundry list of things to evaluate, and then these were the ones that rose to the level of concern? So we're not seeing those other things where they said they rated the board or the president good or excellent or whatever. We're kind of not seeing those things. Are those in this report?
Yes, and actually that previous slide that talked about some of the things that have improved in recent years are some of the areas in which we saw, for example, on setting goals and measuring performance. Those were examples of areas in which the campuses thought not only that there had been improvement, but that the system office was performing those functions pretty well.
Okay, I just want to make sure we have kind of a balanced view here.
And one other thing to point out, there is an appendix at the end of this report, if you're interested, that has a more complete review of the findings of the survey. Not only did we ask these kind of general questions, but we literally went through more than 100 different services and asked campuses, the presidents, to rate the system office's performance on those services. So obviously that's a lot of detail, but if you're interested, it's there.
Great, thank you.
There has been growth in the system office in recent years. Between fiscal years 2002 and 2009, the system office's expenditures grew by 52%. If you adjust that for inflation, the growth was 15%. I should also mention that on this slide, as I talk about growth, we're not including here either the expenditures or the number of campus presidents. I mentioned earlier that they are considered to be employees of the system office, but when looking at trends, we took them out because they only became employees a few years ago. Also, system office spending in fiscal year 2009 was 4.6% of total MNSCU spending. That's up from 4.1% in 2002. So essentially what that means is that the system office was growing at a faster rate than the rest of MNSCU. In addition, the total number of system office staff during this period grew from 318 full-time equivalent employees to 385. And another part of the staffing equation is what was spent on consultants. And during this period, the expenditures for professional and technical consultants more than doubled. Now, these increases happened for a variety of reasons. MNSCU leaders launched new initiatives in a variety of areas to try to advance system-wide priorities and to try to respond to campus requests for services in areas like information technology that I'll be talking about in a moment. And in addition, this was also a period when the state appropriations were increasing, and that certainly made some of these increases possible. So what is the right size for the MNSCU system office? There is unfortunately no simple answer to that question. You won't find, if you go and look at the literature, you won't find that there are generally accepted standards out there for how big a system office should be. There's relatively little data for interstate comparisons. For example, there's federal data that's collected on higher education expenditures among all states, but those don't separately break out system office expenditures. And if the question is not just what are we spending, but what are we getting for the dollars that are spent, what we found is that neither MNSCU nor other systems generally have very good performance information on that type of thing. And so it's difficult to not only judge dollars, but what are we getting for those dollars? We did, however, even though there aren't standards, there aren't ready data for comparing states, one of the things we did is, again, we listened to the campuses to hear their views on the system office, which is in large part there to serve them and their needs. We did that in part because, as I said, campuses are many of the services are provided for their benefit, and they have a lot of interaction with the system office. So we asked them about the effectiveness and efficiency of, as I mentioned, more than 100 areas and a number of other general questions, such as what they thought about the size of the system office. And in red on this chart, you can see that about half of the campus presidents said that the system office is too large. About 41% said it's about the right size. Another 6% said it's too small. So overall, on that measure, campus leaders were very much split on whether it should be smaller or not. We also asked whether the system office has taken sufficient steps to eliminate unnecessary or inefficient positions, and those responses are shown here in green. 44% of presidents said the system office has taken sufficient steps. 53% said it has not. So again, very mixed opinions. We offer no opinion in our report on the exact size that the system office should be, either in terms of dollars or number of employees. But in our view, MNSCU needs a sizable system office, given that it has a $1.8 billion budget for the system overall, 15,000 employees, and more than a quarter of a million students, in addition to providing an awful lot of services for the campuses. In most services provided by the system office, we found that a majority of campus presidents told us that the services are provided effectively and efficiently. That's good, although I will also add that there were some of those areas in which there were significant concerns expressed. But again, there were some areas that where the campuses, frankly, were very pleased with the service they get from the system office. An example is legal services. Campuses were overwhelmingly favorable in what they said about that and are glad that there is a centralized type of legal services provided on their behalf. The right size of the system office depends partly on the division of responsibilities between the system office and the campuses. And we concluded that some additional delegation of responsibilities to the campuses would be reasonable. As an example, some campuses have expressed frustration with the job job classifications that are done by the system office. It's a human resources function. And in our view, and in the view of many of the campuses, with proper training, that's the kind of a function that probably could be done by at least some of the campuses that's now done on their behalf by the system office. On the other hand, there are some Minscu institutions that are very small, and they're not looking to take on more duties. And in fact, campus officials told us that there are opportunities that should be explored for multi-campus delivery of some functions that are now done by each campus. And this doesn't necessarily mean that we have to do it in a centralized way, but we think in activities such as payroll processing that, again, are now done individually by campuses, at a minimum, there are some opportunities for campuses to join their efforts, merge some staff, and do this more efficiently. Although we think that Minscu needs a sizable system office, we think this office also needs more oversight from the Board of Trustees and Chancellor. The board focused most of its attention, not surprisingly, on policy issues. It relies largely on the chancellor to oversee the system office activities, and we think that's reasonable for, in many ways, for an organization like this. But at the same time, again, we're talking about a $90 million system office that we think periodically should have some tough questions asked about its role, its size, and its performance. And we think that the Board of Trustees can and should play that role to a larger degree than it now does. And we think that if the board plays that role a little more actively, perhaps the legislature might be less inclined to play that kind of a role, although that's certainly part of the legislature's function as well. But there have been some concerns that Minscu officials have expressed about legislative involvement in some of its affairs, including system office questions. Our report identifies some specific areas that we think deserve closer attention from the chancellor and the board, both to improve efficiency and effectiveness, and also to try to address some services that may not be essential. On page 44 of the report, there's kind of a one-page summary of what some of those key areas are. Some of them are entire divisions of the central office. Some of them are specific activities, but it's kind of a listing of what we think are some of the higher priority areas that need attention. And what I'm going to do is focus on just three of those areas here and talk about them briefly. Let me begin by talking about information technology and what the system office does in this area. I mentioned earlier the growth in the size of the system office, and the vast majority of that growth has been in IT-related expenditures. Just between 2005 and 2009, IT-related expenditures grew 90%. That's compared with 24% for the rest of the system office. And today, IT-related expenditures account for the majority of system office expenditures. Again, this growth has occurred in response to perceptions at the campuses and by the system office that the IT operations were not meeting campus and system-wide and student needs. In our view, the increase in IT spending has produced mixed results. On the positive side, Minscu has upgraded its IT network, or what's sometimes called the IT infrastructure. This is the foundation that a lot of other applications are based on. From what we can tell, the upgrade that has been done in the past couple of years by Minscu has been well received by the campuses, and it's contributed to a reduction in system downtime. In the case of other IT projects, Minsky's investments were not always as strategic as they should have been. The system office took on many projects, more than it probably should have for the number of staff it had. As a result, there were some project sequencing problems. The system office had to rely very heavily on consultants, and a lot of this work is still in the pipeline today. There have been many IT projects to improve specific business functions and student services, and again, most of these are ongoing. Some of them are even in the fairly early stages. The other thing that we comment on in our report is that project management in the IT area by the system office has been relatively weak. For example, some of the projects have been implemented with too little input from users, with too little user assistance and support once those applications are in place. And Minsky has not regularly assessed the work of its contractors at the completion of its IT projects. Another area that we looked at that we think needs some attention is academic and student affairs. It's a large division, again. It has about 90 staff, and it covers a variety of functions. I just want to touch on briefly on a few today that we think need some attention. A key goal of the Minsky merger was to improve the ability of students to transfer from one institution to another. And Minsky has taken some important steps to try to improve that. However, many of the campus officials that we heard from and student association representatives told us that the transfer problems continue to be a serious issue. Also, we heard frustration from campuses and students about the lack of progress in creating what are sometimes referred to as seamless student services across campuses. For example, when students, as many do, attend multiple Minsky institutions, having single ways to register or to be billed or to make payments is something that would be helpful. And it's something that Minsky has been talking about for quite a few years. And Minsky is currently in the process of a new kind of high-profile effort that you may be aware of called Students First to try to accomplish this. But I think it's also important for us to say that during the many recent years that this has been on the plate, not that much progress has been made. So I think it's a kind of a two-edged sword in the student services area. Another area that we heard concerns about is college faculty credentialing. Minsky board policy and the college faculty contract have established a process for developing minimum standards for faculty, and these are to cover about 300 different fields. However, with that many fields, it has been very difficult for the system office to develop those standards and put them in place in a timely way. And some of the college officials we heard from thought that the standards that have been put in place have been quite rigid. One more example, and again, these are just examples. We have others in the report. There's a unit in the system office known as the, often referred to as the Fire Center. And decades ago, this center actually went out and provided direct training to people who are going to become firefighters around the state. That role has evolved a lot over the years, and today its role is much more indirect. It moved to more of a training the trainers and much more of a support role in recent years. And it's frankly unclear to us that firefighting needs to have this kind of specialized, centralized oversight that other academic functions and programs within Minsky don't have. Also, as we talked with local fire officials, we heard very mixed feelings about the actual value of the services that are provided. So that was another area that we flagged as needing some attention. And then one final example I want to give, and I've talked about a couple of big areas, IT and academic affairs, but let me talk about a smaller one, and that is what's called the Development Division within Minsky's system office. It's a three-person division. It oversees campus fundraising, and it does fundraising of its own on a system-wide basis. We looked at about 4 years' worth of fundraising expenditures by this division, and then the comparable, what are called program benefits, the amount of money raised and spent on the system-wide foundation's behalf. And what we found is that the return on investment has been pretty limited. In addition, when we asked presidents to rate the performance of this division, most of the presidents identified this as being one of the least essential system office activities. And a majority of the presidents said that in four or five areas that represented the functions of this office, that they didn't think the services were effective and efficient. What I'd like to turn to last is some of the recommendations that we've directed to the board and the chancellor to address the issues raised in this report. Again, in some of the functions that I just mentioned, IT, academic and student affairs, development, as well as others in the report, such as those listed on page 44, we think that there needs to be either better oversight or perhaps changes in organization and staffing levels. And we've tried to give the board and the chancellor some latitude as opposed to being too prescriptive in terms of exactly what those changes are, but we've tried to highlight what those areas are, in our opinion, that need some attention. In addition, we think that MNSCU needs to have better measures of performance for its administrative services. We recognize that some things are very difficult to measure, whether we're talking about legal services, for example. It's hard to measure in a quantitative way how good that service is. But there are other things that we think MNSCU could either be measuring outcomes or timeliness, measures of cost per transaction, user satisfaction, workload. We think there's more that could be done. We also recommend that MNSCU leaders consider areas in which they could delegate some additional functions to campuses. I mentioned earlier job classification. We suggest that perhaps more management of capital projects could be given to some of the campuses that are capable of taking that on. In addition, state law says that MNSCU leaders should foster administrative arrangements that promote efficient services. And while we don't have hard evidence that multi-campus administrative student or multi-campus administrative service delivery is going to lead to savings, we did hear from a lot of campus officials that, again, there are some opportunities here that haven't been fully explored. There's a table in the report on page 30 that identifies some of those services that campus officials mentioned as perhaps having more potential. In addition, we think that MNSCU leaders should monitor consultant expenditures and performance more carefully. In fiscal year 2009, professional technical contracts accounted for more than 20% of system office spending, and that's a number that has increased in recent years. So we think it's important that the board not only review the overall level and cost effectiveness of consultant spending, we think it's important for the chancellor's staff to periodically review contractor performance after work has been completed. And finally, we suggest a need for improved methods of selecting and implementing IT projects with stronger efforts to solicit campus input, more time for user testing, user training, closer tracking of project status. Those are all things that could improve in the IT area. And again, we've directed our recommendations in this report at MNSCU, at the board and the chancellor, but I think the legislature certainly has a role in oversight as well, and we think it would be useful for MNSCU leaders to come back to you at some point and to address what actions they've taken in response to these recommendations. So just to summarize, again, when people sometimes wonder, you know, why are we so focused on a system office that altogether represents only 5% of MNSCU expenditures? Again, one reason is that when we focus on the state appropriations portion of what MNSCU spends, the system office accounts for $1 out of every $8. So it is big and it is important. A key question is whether the system office's activities add value to those of the individual colleges and universities. And it appears to us that campuses value a lot of what the system office does on their behalf. But we also think there are some important areas where there could be improvement, where the performance of the system office hasn't been strong enough, or where its involvement hasn't been absolutely essential. And because of this, we urge MNSCU leaders to take a closer look at the system office, at how responsibilities are divided between the campus and the system office, and also whether there is a need to make adjustments in the system office's role and its size and performance. Madam Chair, I'll stop there and see if there are questions.
Let's see if there's some questions. I'd like to begin by asking, in the course of your discussion today, Mr. Alter, you talked about the central office of the MNSCU system is being in place to serve the campuses. And I'm wondering, is that a shared mission statement? Because I'm wondering if that is the case, then where does this conflict occur when establishing priorities for spending, that the that there's this disagreement that the that does not seem to be the case, and that the spending is at the central office priorities, or the administrative priorities take priority over campus priorities? What are, did you discover anything, or can you shed any light on that?
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, and let me say again about in terms of the role of the system office. The system office has a number of different roles, and there are certainly some that where it is providing coordination and leadership, where it's developing a budget, things like that. I mean, those are things that it is doing and taking the lead on. But I think what's also interesting is that when you look at the breakdown of spending and what the system office does, more than 80% of what the system office does is in the area of what's called campus services, where it is really providing some sort of service on behalf of the campus. And so I think that's why, you know, it's certainly not the only thing that the system office does, and it may not in some cases be the most important thing, but it is the largest share of what it does. And that's why I think in some of these areas when we heard concerns, and the concerns were often about performance, I don't think we heard a lot about duplication in terms of, you know, campuses saying, you know, we do this, but the system office does this too. It wasn't so much that there was a feeling that there was duplication between the system office and the campuses, but again, there was some feeling that maybe in some cases the right entity wasn't doing it, that perhaps in some cases more could be done by the campuses that's now done by the system office. But I would say even more commonly, there were some frustrations about service delivery, so that in some of these areas that I mentioned, there was I think some gratitude in some cases that the system office was in fact providing the services, but there was also some frustration that the service wasn't provided better than it was. That's how I would characterize it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to pass the gavel to Senator Pappas.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How far did you drill down into the shared services? You're talking about multi-campus or centralized service delivery. There's a list of some items. Did you dig very deep into any of those items specifically to see if you thought they were being handled well or could result in more efficiencies? And I'm particularly interested, I don't see on this list anyway, shared purchasing. So I wonder if you looked into that.
Madam Chair and Senator Latz,
Mr. Alter,
that list is certainly not exhaustive. I mean, we included on that list some of the things that we heard from multiple campuses. And shared purchasing is something that I think is already done to some extent. The system office has, in the last couple of years, done some and initiated some cooperative purchasing that it does on behalf of the campuses in a variety of areas. And it can include things like buying mattresses, which all of the state universities do for their dorms. And the system office has been helping with that. It can be trying to get rid of surplus equipment like computers. And the system office has been trying to take some initiatives in that area. And generally, we heard positive things to the extent that we heard from campuses on this issue. They were pleased that the system office was initiating cooperative purchasing or other types of services like that. As far as that list, again, that we have, we can't say for sure that those services can be cost-effectively provided, but these were ones in which some of the campuses thought that a multi-campus arrangement had some potential, and again, where multiple campuses said that. So it needs some additional investigation by the system office, but I think there's some potential there.
Chair, follow up.
Senator Latz.
Sir, did you get a sense of, for example, in the shared purchasing, how much more could be accomplished than what is being accomplished now? How much money could potentially be saved if it were expanded beyond some of the categories you mentioned?
Madam Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Latz, we certainly don't have an independent opinion on how much could be saved. MNSCU believes that in the last couple of years, I believe, that the savings have been, I believe, $400,000 as a result of cooperative purchasing. but I think even they would acknowledge that this is a fairly new effort. Some of these areas are just getting off the ground, and that there's a lot of room for potential savings that hasn't been fully explored.
Senator Sharon.
I have a couple of other questions. I would like to go back to this. I thought I'd heard you say when we were talking about 80% of the budget is in support services that most presidents give the board only fair to poor ratings for considering the needs and the priorities of the individual institutions and allowing institutions to decide local issues. That's where my question's coming from, that says there seems to be a disconnect between the idea that it's there to serve the campuses and the feeling that when all priorities come in, the campus's priorities are not given the same weight. Or to help me understand how to interpret that.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I think you've got it there. I mean, I think that what campuses are saying sometimes is that in some cases they don't think, as I said before, the line is drawn properly, and there are some things that they could be doing that the system office wouldn't have to do on their behalf. But I do think that in some other areas they feel as if maybe their voice hasn't been heard as much as it should. And I mentioned earlier there have been some things that the system office has done, like the Leadership Council, to involve presidents more in decision making. And yet again, some of the presidents are saying, you know, that's good, that's a good step. And yet, so there's kind of a but after the belief that the Leadership Council has been a good step forward. I think there's a feeling that hasn't always had the impact that they would like to see. So I'm not sure I can give you a specific example of a decision or a service in which they, because I'm sure it would differ among the many presidents, but I think there's just some feeling that even though they have a little bit more input, that hasn't always translated into their needs being adequately appreciated.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, I'm trying to get my head around the issue that we're being asked to really understand is what's happened in a centralizing of the system, and that there's great benefits that can come from that, cost savings that can come from that, but there's also the other potential that as a systems administration can be insulated, the board may not be doing oversight or not connected with or have a shared sense of what that relationship should be, and the things become at conflict rather than a system that's working to move effectively and efficiently towards common agreed goals and outcomes. So you did mention that you thought oversight of the board, more oversight of the board of the decision making about these priorities was important. Can you give me some insight about, because we do select board members and we do need to question board members when they come forward, and it's always difficult to determine what I need to ask in order to make certain that the board member is functioning in a way that keeps the system healthy and doesn't become a part of the insulated administrative system, that the members of the board do not become a part of the administration, in other words.
Right. Madam Chair, I think that's, I mean, I think questions along that line are perfectly appropriate. I mean, I think the board is the governing body, but they have to exercise some independent oversight, and they're in a position to do that with the system office. I think that you could argue that for the campuses, you've got not only the board, but the system office itself that is providing some oversight to what's done every day on the campuses. But when it comes to the system office, it really is the board that is uniquely situated to provide that oversight. And what we're suggesting is that this doesn't have to be something that is all-consuming or that adds enormously to the workload of the board. It could be as simple as during those times of the year when the board is approving a budget for MNSCU and for the system office, it should have some better information than it now has about not only the size of the system office but the growth trends, about how much is going for consultant expenditures. Some of those things, I think that the information has been fairly superficial in the past. So, yes, I think there is kind of an attitude that the board should bring to the table of wanting to be shown the results that the system office is providing, but I think they also need some better information in their hands as well.
Madam Chair, could I just add one thing to that? Jim Noble's legislative auditor.
Mr. Noble.
There are a lot of interests involved in running a big organization like this, obviously. But one that I want to make sure gets put on the table, and it's addressed in our report, and that's students. Because in the end, this whole system should be about students. And I think that, again, one of the things we did in creating this system was to try to have not just a collection of colleges and universities, but a real system that students could navigate through, particularly those that start at the two-year institutions and want to move up to receive a degree at a four-year institution. And I think one of the areas that was most disappointing to us, and frankly was quite disappointing and concerning to the board members that we presented our report to just the day after we released it, was the issue of transferability of credits among the institutions. Some of the board members actually expressed real surprise, if not shock, that more progress had not been made. And they did pledge that given this report and that issue, that that would become their highest priority for seeing change occur within the system.
Senator Clark.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Alter and Mr. Nobles, I mean, you brought up the topic, obviously, that's been on my mind. I had an opportunity to meet with both of them. When we were hoping to have had them in earlier, and as the chancellor and others are sitting there, I want to reinforce I've met with him and staff as well. And there's a number of very good things that are going on, but to me this was one of the more disconcerting pieces. In part, you know, we've got college-age kids in our house, and while our younger son, Nate, may have become the master of transferring credits, most people don't spend their life trying to, go from place to place quite like that. And, you know, I was thinking about it, and St. Cloud State was one of the institutions that wasn't too excited about becoming part of a system. But there's been a number of really good things about it, and we've got great people. But sometimes mission creep starts happening, and Senator Latz and I were just talking about the number of other pressures that are on there, especially in these budget times. But I go back to this was 15 years ago that this was created. Our son, Nate, was 7. He's now a senior, second semester senior in college, and our students just can't wait. And so we've been working on a bill that I believe the committee will be hearing just to reinforce, I think, not because we want to micromanage, but I think it's really important that our students should know that if they're taking English 101 somewhere, that it's going to transfer. And I recognize that, you know, it's the institutions sometimes or the students themselves or other kinds of things that could get in the way. But one of the real core reasons for creating this system was so that we could have that ease of transferability, and it didn't matter if it was Winona State or Mankato State or St. Cloud or Metro or one of the technical colleges. And hopefully we'll get an opportunity to keep working and moving forward. And I know the chancellor has assured me that this is a high priority for him before he leaves, but I also know, as I told him, that sometimes you know, we need to focus on what we want, not how. And so I think that's what this would be. But we also we need to not be just trusting something's going to happen. We need to perhaps have a little bit more teeth in here so we're getting information back and making sure it's actually happening.
Mr. Alter, I assume that with your survey of the presidents that all these things you were surveying them on were activities that the central office said that they were responsible for delivering.
Madam Chair, it wasn't
a case of, well, the central office didn't do that, but they're not supposed to.
Madam Chair, there was agreement with the system office that these were all activities that are within their purview.
Okay, great. Senator Sharon.
I don't know if I can quite get at what I'm thinking. I would just get a little background. I've been on city council besides being in the legislature, and I can tell you that at the city level, we see three legs to a process. There's the, in our community in Mankato, there's a city administrator and all the staff, and that administrator works at the bequest of the council, and then that administrator manages everybody else. And then there's the public. It's a three-legged stool. But in order for it to work effectively, all of the components of it have to be working effectively. And including that is the city council has to be effectively doing its oversight responsibility and not becoming a part of the administration. It's what I'm talking about. And I'm trying to get at, because I think one of our responsibilities here is the selection of the board, whether or not the board, if if we're not doing something in this audit that we should be doing, or if this surprise that Senator Clark is talking about, it's a surprise to me that it's a surprise to a board that a benchmark for one of the major benchmarks for which this organization was put together is not being effectively met. To me, it strikes that I need some feedback about what we're doing that might be wrong, or maybe wrong is too harsh a term, how we might improve if we want to stay on positive terms. But, you know, we are relying in this system on an oversight process from board members, and that in the process of doing work that there are benchmarks and movement and measurements, that they're consistently seeking information on, and may get information from a broader basis than simply receiving it directly, as we did as council members. We also go to the community for information other than what's presented by the administrator of the city, so that we can really get at what it is we need to be seeing. I'm trying to get at whether you picked anything up to help us improve this system as legislators.
I'll make one comment, and then maybe Jim will add something too. But to the board's credit, at the outset of this process, both the chancellor and the board made what was something of an unusual move in coming to the Legislative Audit Commission and requesting this report. You don't find a lot of people who say, I want to be audited. And yet the board did that with the chancellor and said, you know, we've heard concerns about the system office. We don't completely understand who's right and who's wrong here. Could you take a more in-depth look and tell us what you think? You know, I think that's to the board's credit. We do think that the board itself should have that kind of an understanding of some of these areas that perhaps it hasn't had. But I think this report provides them with at least something to go forward with and to improve their ability to oversee, to target certain areas. So I think that was a good thing that the board did in supporting that, even though we think there are additional things that they could be doing.
And Madam Chair, if I could just add, because in addition to doing this evaluation, we do regular financial audits at Minsku on the campuses. And actually, again, it is the board that has established that relationship with the Office of the Legislative Auditor and actually contracts with us to do some additional work and provide some resources so that we can do additional work beyond what we otherwise would be able to do. And so I have quite a bit of interaction with Minsku and specifically with board members that are on the audit committee, where we always present our audit reports. And so I think the board members are due a lot of credit. They are, after all, citizens with other jobs. They can only dedicate a certain amount of time to this responsibility. And from my experience, they take that responsibility very seriously. But I think you make an excellent point that any board needs to get information from many sources, not just from the administration. And I see that the audit work that we do from time to time provides board members with information that, again, surprises them somewhat. I know just in the last audit committee we had, where we presented some of our financial audit findings, we had some issues that administration at the campus level and in the central office was deviating from board policy. And board members were not aware of that, and they took that quite seriously and followed up, and I have visited with board members since then. So I think you give a very good message that to be an effective board, they need to have multiple sources of information, not only from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, not only from the presidents, but from students, from citizens, from business organizations that are very interested in the curricula of Minsku. And so it needs to be from multiple sources, but recognizing there's only so many hours in the day that these citizens can dedicate to this function.
Members, I was hoping to not spend much more than an hour on this, so I think we need to move on. And thank you very much for your work. Excellent report. And I'd like to invite the Chancellor, Mr. James McCormick. And did you want, Mr. Thies, did you want to come forward too, the trustee?
Johns, please.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to respond to the report of the Office of the Legislative Auditor on the Minnesota State College University System Office. With me today is Trustee Scott Fiss, who's the chair of the Audit Committee of the Board of Trustees and the Board Treasurer, and Dr. Patrick Johns, the president of Anoka Tech, Anoka Ramsey Community College. Now, Pat, this leadership council we talked about, Pat is the past co-chair of that with me, elected by his colleagues, and he's one of only two presidents that were here before the merger. So he has that perspective 15
Welcome.
Years ago. As you know, several months ago, and I appreciated Mr. Noble's pointing it out, we requested this evaluation to help address the questions about the role of the office, as well as a guide to this managing this large, complex organization. And we have great respect for the Office of Legislative Auditor, and we're pleased that the Legislative Audit Commission agreed to do the study this last year. I would like to compliment Mr. Nobles and staff for conducting what I believe was a thorough and professional review, probably hundreds of hours. The report has provided us with a timely and valuable insights, and I want you to know that we're considering them very carefully and look forward to report back. We'll get a lot of them done by May, but reporting back, Mr. Fiss will say more about that. We appreciate the OLA's acknowledgement of the progress we have made as a system since the evaluation was conducted in 2000. I hope you'll take time to look at that, too. And that was the year before I became chancellor. And as the incoming chancellor, I want you to know that I found this 2000 report very helpful. And I was pleased to see that the current report found that we'd made substantial progress in many areas. I also would like to provide a little context for you. You're involved with this regularly, but just to remind you of many other things. We're the fifth largest system in the country of 2- and 4-year colleges based on student enrollment. Our technology infrastructure serves 424,000 students and 15,000 employees, including faculty. While the report notes some challenges that are before it, it also recognizes strategies and initiatives already being undertaken to address these concerns. For example, Student First is an initiative to create a seamless student services environment that we began last year. Work is well underway. Couldn't do it without the IT, by the way. We are looking at ways to strengthen the project selection and management practices in our information technology services. At the time of the merger in 1995, we had three different systems. The computer systems, information systems, didn't communicate with each other. As a result, the old technology network was cobbled together, and we couldn't even, as of 2 or 3 years ago, get repair parts. They were already not being made. So we presented with the demands of students. We indicated that we needed to make a major investment. It was supported by the legislative and executive branches to give us the money to do this, and we thank you for that. Now, we've overhauled this aging infrastructure to provide reliable protection against security thefts and prevent massive breakdowns during the class registration and other high-demand areas. It's a complicated system and has taken some time to overhaul. And, of course, that money came over a year ago, so we're in the process of implementing. And just to give you an idea, this technology network has one of the largest is one of the largest higher education databases in the country. It processes more than 27 million financial transactions every year and manages setup and registration for more than 3 million academic courses each year. Massive. Within the last 6 months, we put a major new piece in place of the Oracle operating system, which provides a stable platform for the first time in years and should serve us for years to come, and that came as a result of a new investment. The report acknowledges that we've made important improvements, but observes that progress on some planned IT projects has been mixed. One difficulty we've had is the hiring enough qualified people with IT backgrounds to fully staff the 24/7 operation that we must provide in today's world, and we view this as an area for continuous improvement. And a lot of the contracts were in this area, and that will be shifted out of contracts into our own people, which is really more efficient. Now, the auditor's report now is with our Board of Trustees, and I'll turn to Mr. Thiss in a moment. But I wanted to answer your one question, Senator Sharon, in just a minute on this sort of the difference between campus thinking that maybe we don't always know their priorities. And I'll just give you three examples because I think that's what you were looking for. When the presidents indicate the needs for capital facilities, they requested over $1 billion worth of facilities. By the time our staff was done with it, the board, with presidents having a chance to make an appeal, that was cut down to $300 million. So, I mean, there were $700 million worth of projects that presidents feel, some of them might feel, that their priorities weren't considered. Mm-hmm. We've had some hard decisions to make on law enforcement buildings. They're a very big thing, just as a second example. And a number of colleges wanted to have law enforcement programs. We decided we couldn't afford to have 10 of these buildings. So we have three. We have one at Hibbing, we have one at Alexandria, and we're building one out at Hennepin Tech. And we've concentrated in those areas. There are other colleges that would like to have had those programs and don't. We do a very careful review of programs. We don't want to approve more programs if we already have them and don't need them. By the same token, we don't want to cancel a program, and I've had to really encourage a president to hang on. Machine Tool at Faribault, just a few students, but we canceled the one at Dakota, and I'm afraid even with a few students, if we cancel, we won't meet those needs. So that president might say he would have liked to have canceled it, and we sort of encouraged him not to. So there's lots of involvement on the part of leadership where we are back and forth. And then the fourth one is that we pushed presidents hard to increase their numbers of math and science. That's because the board and all of us believed that we need to increase math and science in the state. That was the background for nursing programs and so on. So we pushed presidents, in that case, all of us, to deliver to the people of Minnesota. Those are just some examples of where we might have been crossways. Now, I'd like to turn to Mr. Thiss, who will really tell you how the board's taken charge of this, and we're going to move ahead.
So, Chancellor, what you're saying is that you're not, you may not win the, you know, Miss Popularity contest because you have to, you can't please everyone.
And it's getting harder.
And you have to make tough decisions. Well,
Senator Pappas, let me just say to that that I would also like to hear from you acknowledgement of where you think you may not have and could have done a better job of hearing priorities. I understand what you're saying. I think you're in the position of having to sort of establish priorities, and we're asking you many complicated things to try to bring this campus into and how we deliver higher education services in an affordable way. But I can't believe that I can't just dismiss the message based on some of those realities that you're saying. What is true about what they're saying in the Minsky system?
I think there would be truth in all of what they're saying about the priority issues. But I do want to remind you that they gave us a good vote on the way the goals were established. And this is a very participatory process. There's listening. Presidents on the Leadership Council are involved. Discussions with faculty. And the board eventually decides on the goals, that one-page set of goals, four main issues. And so it is a collaborative process. And then presidents have great autonomy within that to be developing their own plans. There's no one plan fits all. Each institution sort of brings forward its plan. They actually review their plan with the board on a regular basis, their vision and their program. And so I think that there is a lot of room for a lot of we think the great value of the system is the fact that we can tailor what is offered to the needs of the state in the various areas. In fact, that's the second goal, third goal of the system, is to meet regional needs and local. So, but we are taking all of these as good suggestions, and we've got to figure out how to do better. Not being defensive, I really am not on this, and we can improve that. We also, and I don't use this as an excuse, I'm not whining about the financial situation, but we are constantly not able, the presidents are in a difficult situation of not even being able to do most of the things, some of the things they want to do. So we'll work on that and to try to make it better, and I would welcome further discussions with this committee at any time on this questions of priorities and how we come to those decisions.
If you want a really in-depth look at how presidents struggle with this, I sent you all a copy of the letter I got from Phil Davis from MCTC because of the cabinet-making decision. It's like a 4 or 5 page letter about the process they went through, who they consulted with, and what they're faced with in terms of being asked to come up with budgets that cut 5%, 6%, 10%, 15% in their budget. And I think he did, and if I haven't responded to him, I intend to respond to him and thank him for that because it's very, very, you know, we can see how passionate that people feel about that program, and yet he had to make a decision to cut it. Chancellor, before you turn it over to your trustee, I guess I want to understand more, and maybe you could have someone call me about the joint purchasing issue. because I guess I assume, because you and I have been on MEC for so many years, that the reason that Minsky was not doing more joint purchasing through the Midwest Higher Education Compact is because you did your own, and you were a big enough purchaser yourself that you couldn't save any money by going through MEC. And it's not real clear to me in here. It looks like there's some recommendations in here that they're saying that you should expand more use of multi-campus service delivery for administrative services. I don't know if they addressed, Mr. Alter, did you address any kind of joint purchasing in your report? I haven't read it thoroughly enough to know.
Madam Chair, as I said, they've initiated that, and we think they should continue
okay.
to expand it.
Okay. I'm just surprised that it's initiated when I thought that for the last 8 years you've been doing it. So maybe sometimes there's a little too much independence from the campuses out on their own, and there can be, we talk about this a lot, about joint purchasing, there can be a lot of cost savings through large purchases.
And Madam Chair, just on that, we'll come over and talk with you about that, but Madam Chair, on the looking for efficiencies, we have three sets of four or more institutions now. They're combined under one president. Of course, they're doing that. Mm-hmm. And those have been in more sparsely populated. We also have a very exciting effort that's going well of bringing a tech college and Bemidji together under one president. So we in a number of cases, have done some of those things. Also, probably some of the differences is the smaller institutions don't have the capacity, but the big institutions can do a lot of that on their own. But I look forward to meeting with you on that subject.
Okay. Mr. Thiss. I'm going to get it wrong, I know. Thiss?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right, thank you.
My name is Scott Thiss. I have been a trustee of the system. This is my fourth year, and this is also my third year as serving as chair of the audit committee. Our audit committee processes not only financial audits but also program audits, and this recent OLA report would fall more in their programmatic section. I can tell you that our Board of Trustees takes all audit findings seriously, and we evaluate them, and we view them as truly continuous improvement opportunities. The audit committee met, as Mr. Noble's referenced, the day after the report was issued, and vetted the report thoroughly so we understood what the findings were.
Okay.
Based on that discussion, we developed a set of recommendations, which we forwarded to our chair, David Olson. He has since forwarded specific areas for action to all of our board committees, and the committees will be really addressing, although there's a laundry list, we're going to address four, I'd call them strategic areas. The top area, the number one priority, will be recommendations to develop action plans to improve student services. And really, most urgently, the audit committee we'll gather information about this transferring course credits, and we're doing that through a survey, random survey of 10,000 students. We'll be working with their student organizations. And the objective is to find out how deep is this problem. There are anecdotal instances of transferring working seamlessly and other instances where it's a nightmare. So we need to find out the exact depth of the problem. And all I can say is rest assured that we will act when we find out and can identify what the nature of the problem is. The other three strategic areas that we find out of this report would be strengthening the oversight of the services offered by the Office of the Chancellor. We agree with that. Identifying opportunities for gaining efficiencies at these multi-campus shared services. There are probably opportunities for some clusters that we could be doing more effectively in terms of providing perhaps accounting, payroll, purchasing services, and improving our project selection and management for IT projects. Next month, when the Board of Trustees meets, every committee will have an agenda item to discuss its responsibilities for addressing the findings of this report. The Audit Committee, which I chair, has been given the responsibility for oversight of the entire process. We'll be reporting to our board, to the public, as to how are we doing to implement the recommendations as appropriate. And we expect to make measurable progress by June on certainly the low-hanging fruit, and any of the longer-term projects hopefully will be addressed by January 2011. And if we have some longer-term issues out of that, we'll have a timeline and assign responsibilities. So the audit committee here will be working on opportunities for continuous improvement, and we think the conclusions of the report are fair and balanced. And I will say we're focusing on those areas that are recommendations for improvement. The report addressed 106 functions of the central office. 93 of those functions had a positive rating from the presidents of two-thirds or more, if you use that as some type of watershed. So we're focusing on a section of this report which is valuable, but there are also some positive findings here. So we will pursue these issues with vigor, and we commit to you as Board of Trustees that we'll come back and report on our progress.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I do have one question.
Senator Sharon.
I heard an earlier statement, I can't remember who said it, that we need to consider that the board members are employed in other places, and that is a factor to consider in terms of the expectation, at least I have, of board members to be the oversight and to be able to have enough time to do that job. Would you respond to that, whether or not our board members, given their other responsibilities, do we have a reasonable set of expectations for board members giving their being employed other places? What is the amount of time you think that's necessary to effectively carry out a board role, and should we be making some changes there?
Mr. Thiss.
Madam Chair, Senator, I'll give you my personal experience. If I look at my per diems and travel and whatever, I probably put in 20% of a month, oftentimes in spurts, and then doing nothing but committee meetings, board meetings, campus graduation ceremonies, representing the MNSCU at various functions. We are a policy board, not a management board, and I think that probably that balance, some trustees may be 10 to 15%, others with more responsibilities may be above 20%. But I think that it's time-consuming, but if we stay at the policy level, it's very doable. But there's a fine line as to when do we become management and when are we strictly policy, and the more you get into management, the more time it takes.
Thank you. And I'd like to hear from Dr. Johns, especially with your historical perspective on are things better?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Pat Johns, president of Anoka Ramsey Community College, and as was mentioned, I believe I'm one of two college and university presidents who were here when the higher ed merger took place in 1995, and I can tell you that, yes, we are in a much better place than we were in the year 2000 when the last study was done, and significantly a better organization than we were when we were merged in 1995. During my tenure, I have worked for 8 different chancellors. In fact, I believe at one period of 6 years in the 1990s, I worked for 5 different chancellors. When we merged the three systems, we were unorganized, we were in a basic survival mode at the college and university level, and we were not a system in reality. And we continued this way for several years. Today, presidents have a real voice in shaping policy. We have a much better sense of what should be centralized and what we can do to allow autonomy for the colleges and universities. The establishment of the Leadership Council in the year 2000 has allowed a voice from all presidents, from the staff at the Office of the Chancellor, and the Chancellor to come together. Are we always in total agreement on every issue? Of course not. However, we have come to learn how to better speak with one voice for the betterment of students. For example, through the Leadership Council, presidents have a voice for participating on our human resources, finance, technology, diversity, advancement, and academic and student affairs committees. We have the responsibility to provide a college and university perspective in shaping strategy, policy, and planning in support of the Board of Trustees. The college and university presidents and the chancellor's senior staff will carefully review this report and work with the board to make any necessary changes. The report offers several opportunities to examine the alignment of activities between the system office and individual campuses. Some recommendations, such as more authority to presidents for approving local purchases and classifying employee positions, offer the promise of greater autonomy and flexibility. Presidents, I believe, are prepared to take on more responsibilities when it will help us fulfill our missions and improve service to students, but we must be cautious about doing so in a cost-efficient manner for the system. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Dr. Johns? And thank you for your long service. My husband, though, often says to me about our long marriage of 33 years that it does show some lack of imagination. I trust that's not the case with you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. We hope to continue our dialogue. And Mr. Stanton wanted to comment on the auditor's report. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Russ Stanton, Director of Government Relations for the Interfaculty Organization, which is the union which represents about 3,800 full and part-time faculty at the seven state universities. First of all, I wanted to compliment Mr. Alter for what we think was a very good report. The issue of central office size and growth has been a burning issue among faculty for a number of years. In fact, every time I have a meeting with a faculty group, that seems to be an issue that comes up. And we think that the auditor's office did a very good job of quantifying and analyzing the issue. And we hope, I know you're very, very busy this time of year, but we hope that all the senators will read it thoroughly. We also believe that the report confirms many of the things that faculty have raised as issues over the years. The faculty have said that the central office is large, and indeed it is. You know, $89 million is a lot of money. It's one out of every $8 that you appropriate to the system. It indeed has is a large operation. Secondly, the faculty have claimed over the years that the central office is growing substantially, and I think the report, if you read it carefully, documents that very well. The three systems in 1992, the three system offices of the central offices of the three prior systems had a grand total of 233 FYE positions in their central offices. Today, MNSCU has 285 staff positions in the central office. In fact, 415 if you include the college and university presidents, but I don't think they should be included. Now, on top of that, of the actual growth in staff, there's also been a dramatic growth in outside consultants hired, 110% growth since 2002. We know that the expansion of the central office is because they're providing more services. I mean, we've always recognized that. For us, the question is, are these services always needed and desired by the campuses? And are they more important than the core mission of MNSCU, the MNSCU institutions, which is teaching and learning, which occurs at the local level? Because every dollar that's spent in the central office is a dollar that could have been spent supporting classroom instruction. We're headed into some very rugged times at the state universities. At Mankato last week, we found out 82 positions, teaching positions, going to be eliminated. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to see as the stimulus money runs out, that's going to be happening all over. We're very concerned that the central office expenditures be scrutinized very carefully and that they take a proportionate cut of the reductions in appropriations that the rest of the system is having. Most of the growth in MNSCU, of course, in the last few years, as the report points out, is due to the IT investments. And I want to point out that the faculty have never questioned. We were very supportive in the first proposals that came out to improve the core operating IT systems. We had very antiquated, outdated systems that were very costly to maintain. It's been the faculty's opinion, however, that MNSCU has gone overboard in the recent years in terms of their IT investments. And much of that expansion was poorly focused. It didn't take into account the user needs, and it didn't result in efficiency. And I think the report, if you read it, confirms that. I would point particularly on page 74. Also on page 77 of the report, it points out that their review of 11 IT projects undertaken, only four of the project proposals included any substantial information on cost reductions. And indeed, if you look on page 20 of the report, from 2007 to 2010, operation and maintenance costs of the IT system increased 65%. So I guess what we would recommend is that Minsku slow down in its IT investments, get more focused on what's absolutely necessary, the core systems, and projects that actually reduce cost rather than increase it. And we think that there's some system offices services that could just simply be eliminated. For instance, the development office, the Minsky Foundation, they spend a dollar in administrative costs for every 75 cents they raise for the system. Frankly, that's not a very efficient operation. In fact, the campus presidents, if you look at there's a very good survey of them, of their opinions, 84% of them ranked that service as adding the least value of all the system services. We think that some of the bureaucratic control of the central office could be eliminated. For instance, we have policies that say that local presidents are limited in the number of honorary degrees that they can confer. And instead of investing a lot of resources into developing those kinds of policies, we think that presidents could simply decide those sorts of things by themselves. And lastly, we agree with 47% of the campus presidents in the survey that the Minsky number of Minsky staff is significantly too large or somewhat too large, and we need to take a careful look at that. So thank you for the opportunity to express our views, and appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stanton. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Senator Weaker.
Madam Chair, Mr. Stanton, on the issue of transferability of credit.
Yes.
Teacher, that perspective, what's a realistic date for implementation of that goal?
Well, if you look at the report, you'll see that there's been many initiatives over the last number of years to improve transferability. The Minnesota Transfer Curriculum, the BAS degree, Bachelor of Applied Science, the DARS system for knowing which credits will transfer, the CAS system, which is related to that, et cetera. So I think progress has been made. I will admit it was slow over the years. I will say that there's still more that needs to be done. I was looking at the student remarks. The Minsky website is very difficult to use, according to the students. I noticed in the report that, for instance, some of the colleges and universities had worked out transfer articulation agreements that weren't on the Minsky site, so that, you know, it's difficult for students to know about that. I think it's something that always has to be. We always have to keep working on it. I will say I don't think you're ever going to solve that problem. I first came to the legislature in 1972, and it was an issue then. It's been an issue ever since then. And a lot of it has to do with people being concerned about the quality of the product that they produce. And if you've ever studied total quality management, Deming's model, one of the key things in quality production is having some control over the quality of the inputs that you get to your system. It's pretty hard to have quality outputs if you're not getting quality inputs. And it's very important that there be some quality control over the content of the courses to make sure that there were the right courses to feed into the degree, that they had the right content, and that they properly prepared people for upper division work. But it's something that I think we have to continually work on. There is an appeals process. There's only been three appeals in the last 4 years of transferability. But part of that might be that the students just don't know how to use the appeals process, and it's cumbersome. It's hard for a student at Southwest State to, you know, appeal to a central office. So I think it needs continuous work, and we're willing to continue working to improve it.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, my questions are really more general. They're not for Mr. Stanton. Would that be appropriate at this time? Can I make a few comments on the overall report?
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have three areas that I wanted to quickly comment on. The first one is on page 88 and has to do with the method in which Minsky brings forward its capital improvement projects. And I would, it's been my experience with working with the institution, particularly in my district, that, and having served on the bonding committee, I think that Minsky does a very good job of prioritizing the projects that are brought forward to the legislature. So I think that's very positive. But I do think, and the report points out, that we could use some additional work in the pre-design proposals and the work that the institutions are doing locally as they're getting their projects prepared and ready to bring forward. And I would point out, I think that's an excellent example of where outside consultants have been quite successful in some cases when they have been utilized. And I think that's a really positive thing. The report says, the system office often commented that the pre-design proposals were incomplete or inadequate. Sometimes the feedback from the central wasn't necessarily practical or helpful, so I'd like to see some additional work done in that area. Moving forward, page 93 has to do with human resources. This is an area that maybe this is a good time to mention. We've had some experiences in the pension commission, and I think some of the concerns could be noted here on page 93. Campus officials expressed a desire for stronger guidance and better system-wide information systems from the Human Resources Division. And I think taking a look at that portion of the report could be helpful in some of those discussions that we have experienced in the pension commission. So I'd encourage you to follow up on that. And Madam Chair, finally on page 94 and 95 has to do with the development division. I note that the report seemed to focus, I think, on the development division at the central office. Might be interesting to see at some point how the 44 individual foundations at those various campuses, I wondered if they are experiencing the same types of return on investment as the central office or not. That's not necessarily a question that perhaps we have time to dive into today, but probably one that would be good information for the committee to receive at some point in time.
Okay, thank you very much for those comments. And thank you all for coming and spending some time with us today, and hope to be talking to you more with some follow-up. Next, we have a very quick bill from Senator Erickson Ropes that we hope we can send her quickly to the Judiciary Committee. We're still on the policy committee, yeah. Yeah, Senator Erickson Ropes, where are you? Okay. Senate File 2425.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is a bill that just syncs up some language with federal requirements, and I think is extremely non-controversial. It brings focuses on the need to not distinguish between mental illnesses and regular, I shouldn't say regular, but other health issues. Mental illness issues are health issues. And I'm joined here today with Sue Aberholden of NAMI. We're just adding including mental health, to a statute that already deals with a variety of reasons for high-res institutions to contact parents or notify other individuals on a need-to-know basis, that if they're doing that for other health reasons, they should also be including mental health reasons. So it's a mental health parity update in language. And Ms. Aberholden, I don't know, do you want to comment?
Yes. Introduce yourself at the tape.
I'm Madam Chair, members, Sue Aberholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I think you can imagine how frightening it would be if you would find out way too late that your child attempted suicide or had a psychotic break and was hospitalized. And colleges often, you know, call families, call parents when there's been a medical emergency, and we should treat mental illness, you know, certain situations as a medical emergency as well.
Okay, any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, there's someone here from the university if you'd like to hear
from
them.
Okay.
I believe I they already do this as current practice, but...
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Marty McDonough from the University of Minnesota. This bill would comply with our current practice at the university, so we support it.
Okay, great. And Ms. Weil, MSUSA Chair, are you here?
For the record, my name is Jennifer Weil, and I'm the state chair for the Minnesota State University Student Association. And we just want to echo the support for this bill, and that student mental health issues has been something that our association has been discussing for the last couple of years, and we're really, I guess, encouraged to see it being addressed in this way.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to, where's the bill number? Move from. Where am I?
2425.
Thank you. Senate file 2425.
Be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
may I ask a question? Senator Sanjan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Ropes, I'm just trying to think this through in terms of the process. Would this be diagnosed mental health, or in other words, who decides this?
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, it would just put mental health illnesses and episodes and issues into the same category as general health issues. For example, if your son or daughter were at college and was experiencing symptoms leading up to an appendectomy, they would get a hold of the parent probably even before appendicitis might be diagnosed. Your child is having a whole bunch of symptoms and is just left on the ambulance to the hospital. I would think that's an appropriate point to be notifying parents. So now we're just asking that if the symptoms or the struggles that the student are dealing with are mental health related, that they just be included in those parental notifications.
Okay. Senator Erickson Ropes renews her motion. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, the next bill is actually a bill I think we heard before, Senate File 651. It was a bill that I introduced last year, and I just wanted to have it so that we know that we've dealt with this issue before we talk about Senator Rest's bill, which just takes a slightly different approach. And we're discussing this just briefly right now because we're in policy committee, because my bill didn't have any money connected to it, although it's in Senator Stump's committee, though, right?
Yes, it is.
So why can't we consider it, look at it when we look at the finance bill?
Because it's in their policy. It's in the policy.
It's not if it's Senator Stump's committee. It's either. All right, sorry, just a little. It's kind of confusing to us sometimes when we're both a policy and a finance division. So we'll go with the program here. So just to point out in this bill that it requires a six-year, all high schools, that including middle schools, that students have to have a six-year career plan, educational plan before entering ninth grade. This is really connected to that hearing we had where we saw the Navient system demonstrated, because they're very much into having this career plan. It has to include a college readiness assessment. They have to look at careers. It has to include a college or university visit. and it may include other information activities contained in the National Career Development Guidelines. I believe the counselor, the last counselor to speak at our Naviance hearing, talked about those guidelines. Then Section 2 says the student has to have a college readiness assessment, including the ACCUPLACER or an ACT or SAT. And then it also says in Section 3 that students must be given opportunities for post-secondary options or some other program. It could be college in the schools or something else. So with that, why don't we pass out Senator Rest's bill and bring Senator Rest forward. And while she's doing that, I'm going to adjourn the policy committee. The policy committee is adjourned.